Hi, I'm Hannah Baba from Cross Currents, and we've got some news for you. KELW is now accepting applications for our summer news internship. We're looking for early career radio reporters who want to gain experience in our supportive and creative newsroom. KELW is nationally known for our training programs, and we're proud of our track record for developing diverse public media talent. So come learn with us. The deadline to apply is Sunday, March 8th, and find all the information at KALW.org.
KALW.
There are lots of publications that come out every year telling people, these are the seven things that you should look for in a good, you know, preschool program. And I don't get a lot of questions about the carpets.
A new toxic chemical has been detected in the carpets of a Berkeley preschool.
These chemicals are kind of wonder chemicals, to be honest with you. The problem with that is that that bond doesn't break down.
We'll hear how parents and the state have responded. Then we're dropping the next episode of our new podcast, TBH. And this one's about sneaker culture.
Nowadays, shoes are like pretty expensive, you know. Retail is like $240 or $300, so resale is probably double the price.
Easy money online in this next episode of TBH. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. You may not have heard of the chemical PFAS, but you probably touched it at some point today. It's a man-made chemical found in tons of products in our homes, in nonstick pans, it's in food packaging, in waterproof clothes, but it's toxic. And in one preschool in Berkeley, it's in the carpets. Brett Simpson reports.
It's nap time at Step One Preschool in Berkeley. The curtains are drawn, the toys tucked away in their cubbies. 10 toddlers curl up on cots arranged on a big, fluffy green carpet.
Maybe what we'll do is come back when they're more asleep.
Sue Britson is Step One's director and co-founder. She says that every good preschool needs a good carpet for nap time, for story time, and to roll around and play on.
We want the cots to be on the carpet rather than on the bare floor. It's just kind of warmer and cozier when they're taking their shoes and socks off.
Last year, Britson found out that some of the warmest and coziest carpets were contaminated with toxic chemicals.
There are lots of publications that come out every year telling people, these are the seven things that you should look for in a good, you know, preschool program. And I don't get a lot of questions about the carpets.
That is, until she volunteered the preschool for a study. In 2017, a Berkeley-based research institute tested 18 East Bay preschools for something called PFAS. PFAS is a class of chemicals used as a stain resistant in carpets. But research shows they're toxic. Long-term exposure increases risk of cancer and other diseases, and kids developing bodies are especially at risk. The East Bay study found that about half of Step One's preschool carpets were manufactured with PFAS.
And I thought about, do parents know about this?
Britson says that Step One parents can afford the best. The preschool has organic snacks and non-toxic cleaning products. But before the study, she says most parents had never heard of PFAS. Parents like Raja Antony. I visited his North Berkeley home just blocks from the preschool.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm Brett Simpson.
Nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for your time.
First, I was kind of, you know, I was surprised in a way that, oh, there is something new about the carpets, which is basically almost everywhere.
Antony has a 3-year-old daughter at Step One. When he heard about the study, he didn't only have the preschool to worry about.
You know, I have, as you can see, like Persian carpets everywhere in our house. I'm not going to throw them away unless otherwise I have a good reason for it.
Antony and his wife are careful to buy non-toxic products. But he hasn't heard much on the news about PFAS in carpets. And he says he has to choose his battles.
There are so much doubts and information that as a parent, you try to tune out. Because you don't want to be paranoid about it, because you have enough things to worry about as a parent to be paranoid about your child. So you don't want to be thinking about all the studies that are coming out, right? So that's where we stop.
Antony needs the alarm bells to be a little louder before he makes major change.
So I'm right now in a mode where I'm going to ignore it for now. If it is significant enough, I'm sure I'll know about it.
PFAS aren't on a lot of our radars. but they're in most of our homes. They've been used in tons of products since the 40s, when DuPont first invented them.
Hello, folks. I'm Larry Livingston of the DuPont Company. This story is about a new plastic material trademarked Teflon. It is really a tough guy among plastics. Someday, you ladies may have a lot of things that are coated with Teflon enamel. Rolling pins, measuring cups, even that glue pot. Maybe I need a Teflon-coated throat.
Livingston was right. Teflon took off. And DuPont figured out that the chemicals they use to make Teflon aren't just nonstick. They have stain-resisting, waterproofing, even firefighting powers. Today, PFAS chemicals are in hundreds of products, from food packaging to firefighting foam. They drain off of landfills and industrial sites into our drinking water and enter our bodies. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate that almost every American has some level of PFAS in their blood. And at low levels, that's okay. But if we're exposed in high enough levels, PFAS are extremely toxic. So why haven't so many of us heard of PFAS? I go to Clean Water Action in downtown Oakland to ask Andrea Ventura.
These are the ones that you don't really know about, but you need to.
Ventura is the organization's toxic program manager, and she has a certain admiration for the strong chemical bonds that make PFAS so good at repelling water, grease, and fire.
These chemicals are kind of wonder chemicals, to be honest with you, because that bond makes materials that you use them in very tight. The problem with that is that that bond doesn't break down.
PFAS aren't just toxic. They tend to stick around forever.
They are persistent. They're not going away. They are not going to go away for thousands of years, if at all.
Whatever we dump, we're stuck with. And it's traveling through water, air, and soil across the globe.
Polar bears have been found to have PFAS in their bodies. And polar bears are not eating off a Teflon pan or eating food packaging.
To this day, PFAS are not consistently regulated federally or by the state of California. Andrea Ventura says her team at Clean Water Action has been working with policymakers trying to get them to agree on some laws.
Stay right there, and I'm going to race you.
In the meantime, Step One Preschool's Sue Britson has just kind of been guessing about her carpets.
I don't know how to tell without the tests that they do.
She says last year she replaced the toxic carpets with wool ones.
If the carpet is wool, we assume it's safe. But if it's not, how do we tell if it has these chemicals or not?
Britson can't be sure if the new carpets are any better. And when nap time's over and the kids wake up, there are tons of other things to worry about. She rattles off just a few of them. Cleaning products, food, earthquakes, wildfires.
So, you know, the list just kind of goes on.
The next time Britson buys carpets, PFAS won't be one of those worries. A new bill effective this year will ban sales of PFAS-treated carpets statewide. But carpets are just one way PFAS end up in our homes. For all the other uses, like pans and food packaging, lawmakers are taking it one industry at a time. And for a substance that can stick around forever, these battles may continue for a long time to come. In Berkeley, I'm Brett Simpson for Cross Currents.
Brett is a student at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Tune in tomorrow to hear about a Bay Area town that's grappling with PFAS in their drinking water. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. All right, next we're going to drop the latest episode of our newest podcast, TBH. Time for me to hand it over to the host, Oakland's Youth Poet Laureate Samuel Getacho.
This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers. and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Today, we're talking about commerce and culture. They're intertwined and lucrative. Our phones give us access to tastemakers and marketplaces. We can see an item on Instagram and purchase it on Amazon within a few clicks and a few minutes, and it's available all the time. Fast fashion has given us unprecedented access to the trends set by our celebrities and idols. One of the Kardashians wears a dress, and within hours, Fashion Nova has lookalikes available for under $50. Kanye West starts a fashion line, and all of a sudden, earth tones, ragged sweaters, and chunky sneakers flood H&M and Forever 21 for months. And if you want to talk about trends in streetwear, you have to talk about Black culture. It's no surprise that hip-hop and basketball have an undeniable and overwhelming impact on fashion, particularly on footwear. What began with Michael Jordan and Mars Blackman in the 80s has evolved into much, much more, and swept across my generation indiscriminately. Teenagers have become experts on the different models, brands, prices, and cultural values of sneakers, buying and selling the most exclusive ones at roughly similar prices to old used cars. We'll hear more about that in a minute. But let's turn to some high schoolers in the tech hub of San Francisco to see the ways they're using social media to make money.
My name is Philip Wolf. I am an 11th grader at Lincoln High School, and my media is Nextdoor. Nextdoor is a bit like Facebook, just on a smaller scale. On Nextdoor, I have been able to project my skills as a babysitter and be hired by many families in the area. I've even been managing a mildly successful business through this website, and it helps that babysitters are in short supply. Over time, I got better at my job. I learned both how to deal with kids and how to deal with parents. You've got to learn how to both lie and bribe to babysit kids. At this point, I'm basically a spy. I mainly use my income for games and food, teenagers' essentials.
My name is Ryan Chan, and I am a junior at Lincoln High School, and my media is virtual money. I used to make a lot of money on a website called OP Skins. OP Skins is a market that sells highly desirable virtual skins. These are virtual gun skins, which are basically wraps for your weapons in-game. Sadly, OP Skins shut down for various reasons. I've been feeling the withdrawals from the income loss, so now my income will come from a different source, which is also on the web.
I'm Nery Garcia, a sophomore in Brennan High School. My media is called GOAT. I sell sneakers. I use two apps called GOAT and StockX. Nowadays, you know, shoes are like pretty expensive, you know, especially if it's like designer shoes or shoes by like a rapper or some celebrity. They are like, retail is like $240 or $300, so resale is probably double the price. So that's like $500 you can make.
The white canvas Converse All-Star made its debut about a century ago. Yeah, you heard that right. The first version was produced in 1917, and sneakers have come a long way since then. With the recent rise of social media, the styles have spread across the globe. The global athletic footwear market is expected to reach nearly $100 billion annually by 2025. People can literally trade sneakers like stocks. But it's a testament. Sneakerheads are no longer members of a small subculture. So is the heart of the original culture still alive? San Francisco high schooler Brian Ng takes a look.
As a kid, I remember watching every single NBA basketball game. And what always caught my eye were the shoes. Like in this 2006 playoff game between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Phoenix Suns.
Bryant for the win! Bang!
I love the way the colors of the shoes popped and how the sneakers would squeak on the court. I'm a Golden State Warriors fan, and my favorite sneakers are Steph Curry's Nike Zoom Hyperfuse 2012 PEs. They're a mixture of yellow and light blue with a red Nike sign on the side. Before games, Curry would write, "I can do all things," on the side of the shoes with a Sharpie. Basketball stars are constantly selling shoes on TV, like in this ad.
Every diamond tells a story.
LeBron James reps his LeBron 10 Blue Diamonds.
For the blue diamond, which form when diamonds come into contact with electricity. That's me on the court. I'm approaching this season and lacing up the LeBron 10 with a perspective like never before.
I didn't think much about the culture behind these sneakers when I was a kid. I just knew I wanted the shoes on my feet. Everyone I knew wanted them. The sneaker industry is huge and growing. the global athletic footwear market is expected to reach over $95 billion by 2025. Now that I'm a teenager, many of my friends buy and sell shoes, like my friend Jason Canales. He's loved sneakers since middle school.
My sister used to get like old Jordans from like my cousins, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, they look cool. And like, you know, you'd see them on like TV or like social media, and it just looked cool, and I wanted to experience that too. I wanted to like look like how those people dressed.
A few years ago, Jason decided to turn his love for sneakers into a profit.
It seemed like an easy way to make money, like a fast, easy way to make money. So I was like, oh, I could just buy these sneakers and make like a quick 40, 50 bucks off of it.
So he started selling shoes on apps like Instagram, eBay, and a selling platform called Mercari. But customers kept offering him less cash than he wanted.
I thought that it was easier and I'd be able to make more money off of it, but it turns out it was like hard to get rid of them and to get the amount that I wanted.
My friend Jason is a small-time sneaker dealer, but there are teenagers who make six figures reselling Yeezys and Air Jordans. Some even sell to celebrities, like Benjamin Kicks.
The first big sneaker I ever bought was either the Galaxy Foams or the Myro 7s. And then my dad was like, oh, you must be crazy, you're out of your mind. And then I sold them for $1,000. He's like, oh, so you found someone just as dumb as you.
In 2017, Nike sold the Jordan 1 Off-White Chicago for roughly $200. Now people are buying them online for a nearly $3,000 price tag. I can't even imagine what sneaker culture was before the internet. That's why I called Jermaine King. He's an English professor at Johnson C. Smith University. And he created a class that uses economic theory and hip-hop to show how sneakers can be a cultural language. He's also a big sneaker enthusiast. He remembers wearing a new pair of Reebok 4600s during a trip to Washington, D.C. in the fourth grade.
They were black and gold, like metallic gold, or old gold, as they say. And with those within the culture, it was a big deal. But to every other kid, they didn't even notice.
He says that the original sneaker culture began as a form of expression for African Americans in the 1970s. The documentary, Fresh Dress, shows the history of hip-hop and urban fashion. It's all about oversized pants, graffiti-drenched jackets, and yes, sneakers.
The most important thing was sneakers, you know, because if you had some whack sneakers, it was just a difficult time, you know.
A lot of stuff was always built off, you know, your shoe game. Oh, yeah. That's what was important. You built your outfit off your shoe game.
Then in 1985, a Nike ad featuring Michael Jordan changed sneaker culture forever. At the time, Jordan was a rookie of the Chicago Bulls. Jordan wore Air Jordan 1s, even though it was against league rules at the time.
On September 15th, Nike created a revolutionary new basketball shoe. On October 18th, the NBA threw them out of the game. Fortunately, the NBA can't stop you from wearing them. Air Jordans from Nike.
Nike paid the $5,000 fine per game for him. Jordan took the Bulls to the playoffs while wearing those shoes. In the 1986 song, My Adidas, hip-hop icons Run DMC defend sneaker culture.
My Adidas walked through cops and doors and roamed all over Coliseum floors. I stepped on stage at Live Aid, all the people gave and the poor got paid. And out of speakers, I did speak. I wore my sneakers, but I'm not a sneak.
After that song was released, Adidas signed Run DMC to a major promotional deal. Nike's revenue soared from $270 million in 1980 to an industry-leading $2.23 billion by 1990. Sneakers are still big business, with no sign of slowing down. But Jermaine King, the sneaker professor, says corporate greed took the soul out of sneaker culture. And he says the internet has turned sneakers into a fad.
Internet culture is that, let me Google or let me go to a blog to see how to wear a Huarache, or how do I wear these Vans, or how do I wear this particular shoe? And that didn't happen before the rise of the internet.
Over the last few years, the online sneaker industry has vastly outpaced sales growth in physical stores. Sneakerheads no longer have to hunt for shoes or even leave their bedrooms to buy or sell them. But Jermaine is still optimistic for the future of sneaker culture.
I see it eventually these elaborate prices and resale values dropping and it returning closer to what it was originally. So what we're going to have is a worldwide group of individuals who are subscribers, authentic subscribers to the culture, and that the carpetbaggers will lose interest and move on to something else.
Sneaker enthusiasts may come and go, and the culture is constantly changing, but sneakers aren't going anywhere. I want to learn more about whether sneakers still inspire a sense of community, so I head to SneakerCon in San Jose. SneakerCon is like a traveling trade show for sneakers. Thousands of people wait outside to get in. I go with my friend Jason Canales.
At SneakerCon, we brought probably over 20 pairs of shoes to sell.
When we get inside, there's a ton of people, noise, and a lot of sought-after sneakers, like Yeezys, Off-Whites, and Jordans. David Elias is here to sell some shoes. He says he's one of the original sneakerheads.
I got into sneakers when I was 15 years old. I'm now 31, going on 32. Air Jordan, man. Everything was Jordan, and my parents would, like every other kid, buy one pair of shoes for school and stuff. And my first paycheck, started buying shoes, and I got into it.
He says social media is a big boost for his business, but he doesn't think sneaker culture has become too corporate.
No, not really. I don't think so. I think, you know, at the end, you know, people still care about it, and, you know, of course, it's a business still, so Nike will up their prices a little bit more, but in the end, you know, people are still going to want that shoe.
My friend Jason didn't sell as much as he wanted. But for me, SneakerCon was a success. I felt like I was a part of a community. It's true that big money and status are now a part of the culture. But from what I saw, it is still a form of expression. I think as long as people have feet, they will be interested in having cool shoes. And as long as people have heart, whatever community they belong to will survive.
Brian Ng made that story. He's a senior at San Francisco's Abraham Lincoln High School. I remember the first time I encountered sneaker culture and the idea of shoe game. I was raised as an only child by two Ethiopian immigrants who shopped for practicality. The concept of spending $100 or $200 additional dollars for a pair of shoes they knew that I would soon outgrow made no sense to my parents, and so I spent the majority of my childhood unaware and unconcerned with what shoes I wore. But when I entered middle school, I discovered the social value of fashion. I discovered that my battered, off-brand running shoes were more or less unacceptable, and I started begging for a pair of Jordans. Fast forward a few years, and I now consider fashion one of my passions. I don't have the funds or the commitment to call myself a sneakerhead quite yet, but I do see the value in the dedication that Brian and his friends have to sneaker culture. Fashion, just like any other art form, propels cultural advancement and growth. And as much as those of us that don't understand it may be tempted to invalidate it as such, fashion is a form of expression, one of the most relevant to my generation. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Samuel Getacho.
Thanks, Samuel. TBH reporters were trained and edited by Holly J. McDeed and Kristen McCandless. Support for TBH comes from the California Arts Council, Cal Humanities, and the Association for Continuing Education. TBH episodes drop weekly on Monday. Subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And tune in tomorrow at 5. California is starting to test its drinking water.
I just Googled Pleasanton and PFAS and was shocked to find that it's in my water.
Uncovering toxic chemicals in our water tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents.
Mm-hmm.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Egusa, True Gwynn, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.